You may resume.
Thank you. If a market takes a breakout without any obvious news or reason, a trader like me is going to jump on board right away. I don't know the reason. I don't care the reason. I just want to get involved. Many other people are going to sit and ask why. In the newspapers, they're going to call up their broker. They're going to ask somebody else what's going on. Maybe tomorrow they'll get an answer. Maybe their broker will say, I don't know, I'll look into it and I'll call you back. Maybe the next day they'll have an answer. Maybe it's a fabricated answer because the broker doesn't really know what either. Just looking for rationalization. Maybe there won't be an answer. Maybe the market will keep moving and then the broker will call you up and say, okay, here's why. May or not be true, but now you feel more comfortable with it, so you say, okay, here's my order. Maybe 3 or 4 days or a week goes by. You never get an answer. Market keeps moving. Now you sit there and say, oh, shit. I don't know what's happening, but I better get in case I don't want to miss something. Okay? These people who are slow to react continuously trickle in, and that's what keeps fueling the market fire. That's what keeps the trend going. So the bottom line, if there's an obvious reason, it's a quick spurt and it dies out quickly. If there's no rhyme or reason, there's a continuous trickle of new buyers as they get psychologically comfortable with getting into the position, and that's what keeps the trend going longer and stronger. So we say a breakout without any news is better than a breakout with obvious news. Anticipating other stops in the market. As I said, I trade with stops to get into trades. If I know, for example, everybody else is looking at 20-day breakouts, the highest high of the past 20 days, I might put up two or three ticks before that in order to do some front running and then let everybody else jump on board and get carried along. Now, there are some advanced techniques that I have that are outside the scope of this discussion in terms of short-term support resistance that tell me when a market might break through and when it might hit a resistance level. If I think the market's going to push through, I'll anticipate the price point and put my stop a couple of ticks early. If I think the market's going to hit a short-term resistance level, I'll wait for it to break through and prove to me that it can. I'll put my stop a couple of ticks beyond the breakout point. Okay? Monthly strength and weakness intergroup basically means you trade whatever market is moving first and moving fastest. People said, well, I've got a small portfolio. I'm going to pick one grain and one metal, one currency and one bond and one food product. That's wrong. You say, I'm going to trade soybeans and Swiss francs and gold and coffee and pork and crude oil and euro dollars. So what do you do if corn makes a breakout first? You're going to sit there and say, well, no, I don't trade corn. I'm waiting for soybeans. That's wrong. No matter how small your account is, I tell people within a group, a related group, meaning beans, corn, wheat, gold, silver, platinum, bonds, notes, euro dollars, that sort of thing, whichever market makes a breakout first, or if they all make a breakout on the same day, whichever moves the furthest or moves the strongest, that's the one you want to trade. You don't define in advance which market you're going to put in your portfolio. Rich Dennis used to use the analogy of driving. If you're sitting on a highway in rush hour traffic and you're sitting in the middle lane and the right lane starts moving, you don't stay where you are and say, well, that's moving, my lane's due to move next. What you do is you put on your signal and you switch into the other lane what's moving first. Now, sometimes what happens is after you switch, that lane will stop. The one you used to be in will start moving right. So you got to switch back. So there's not really a problem. And I'm sure brokers would be happy with it. You buy corn, then it stops moving. So you get out of the corn, you buy the beans. And then that stops moving, so you buy the wheat. And then that stops moving, so you get back in the corn. It's okay to do that. You always want to be in the strongest, fastest moving, most powerful trend within a group. Okay, any questions on the five important rules, numbers 6 through 10? Yes, sir. Right. Well, I tend to put my, how do I know which one would be the strongest? I tend to put my orders in everything. And whichever one gets hit first, that's the trade I take. So I'll put my stops in corn and wheat and beans or whatever the appropriate breakout points are. I won't just say, well, I'm just trading beans, so I ignore the other markets. Okay? Okay, next. Minor rules. Island reversal. Everybody knows what an island is and an island reversal. It's a minor dark pattern. Gain of momentum. Lots of people have very complicated algorithms to measure momentum in a market. We just look at it visually. A gain of momentum can be higher highs and higher lows, stronger closes, larger range days, large gaps, any of that stuff, or all of that stuff. The example I use for gain of momentum, in 1987, right before, well, about a month before the stock market crashed. Sometime around the middle of September, the Dow Jones dropped 100 points in one day. That was the first time it had ever dropped more than 100 points in one day session. In the next 3 weeks, it dropped more than 100 points three more times. Each one was bigger, 120 points, 130 points, 150 points. That's a gain of momentum. And if you look at the chart, I think we have one in one of the sections here, it shows you either the Dow Jones or the S&Ps, what that move looked like in prior to October 19th, 1987. A simple visual gain of momentum. Opening gaps and closing gaps. If a market gaps right through your breakout point or through your stop order right on the opening, that's a good place to buy it. And if for some reason you don't buy it because you haven't had your stop in time, if the market can trade all day and never close the gap, and when the market's getting ready to close, the gap is still there, especially if the close is higher than the open, if you haven't gotten in yet, this is certainly the time to get in. If you have gotten in on the opening and now the market's closed longer than that, you might want to consider adding to your position at this point. That's what we mean by opening and closing gaps. Piecemeal profits, adding to a winning position. You buy something at 90, next day it's at 95. We have money management tables and portfolio equity tables to tell you how many positions to have, how fast to add, and everything else. But as I said before, having a profit in an existing position is probably the strongest possible indicator you can have that the market's going away, and it's a very good thing to consider adding to that winning position. By the way, for anybody with less than $50,000 in an account, I don't really encourage pyramiding, but for larger size institutional accounts, I most definitely do encourage pyramiding. Okay, marginal help. Not enough and on their own as an initiation criteria, but the more of these things you have going for you, the better it is. If a market goes limit or direction, assuming it's not locked limit and you can trade there, it's a very good place to trade. I used to have people ask me, why do I want to buy stuff limit up? It can't go any higher. The answer is tomorrow it can go higher. The exchanges, for some reason, believe that putting price limits on markets leads to more orderly markets. How many people believe that? What happens is they're afraid that somebody's going to panic and somebody's going to overreact and try and all get out of a market at once or all get into a market at once, and it's going to push the price beyond where it'd be. And the reality is, let's assume you're long anything, market's limit down. Your first reaction is, oh shit, I better get out. And if you can't get out because the exchange has arbitrarily suspended trading for the rest of the day, because they want you to go home and get a good night's sleep and rationally think about whether you should get out the next morning, what happens is the next morning, as soon as the market opens, the shit really hits the fan. Everybody tries to get out who couldn't get out yesterday. And it exacerbates the move. Bottom line, if a market's limit up, especially if it closes there, obviously a very strong tendency to just continue in that same direction tomorrow. So if you can buy or sell something and limit up, if you can get filled, perfectly placed to trade. Okay? Market rallies on adverse news. like number seven. If bad news comes out and the market rallies, well, that's certainly a sign of a healthy market, isn't it? Self-explanatory. Triangle day failures, I don't talk about very much because I don't remember what they are. Recent false breakout in the other direction. One, that's a sign of a consolidation if you get false breakouts in opposite directions. Two, you get a lot of people caught on the wrong side of the market, and when they rush to cover, that fuels the market to start going the other way. I've seen some of the biggest uptrends I've ever seen start with short covering rallies. When people got short, then the market rallied, and then all of a sudden all these shorts were gambling to buy their positions, and they pushed the market right through the other side and up to the upside breakout point. I've also seen big downtrends start with long liquidations where people got long at the top of a false breakout. The next day the market moved lower. Everybody went running for the door at once. Next thing you know, the market's down, trading through a lower breakout on the opposite side of the channel. So false breakouts in the opposite direction that people get caught on the wrong side of the market just sort of fuels the fire to keep things going. Easy send move since the last breakout, I don't really want to talk about that because you don't know what N is. The bottom line is, even though I'm a trend follower, I recognize the reality that markets don't go straight up or straight down forever. If for some reason I've missed the breakout, and the market has now moved, let's say, six daily ranges away from the breakout, straight up, it might be too late to get in, because the market might be overdue for a correction. Now, since I don't like to talk about counter trend and I don't like to use the word corrections, I don't want to talk about this very much. But just keep in mind, if you miss the breakout, I'd like to say almost unequivocally, it's never too late to chase it. Never too high to buy, never too low to sell, never too late to chase an existing trend. Except if it's gone a significant amount of move immediately without any back filling, it might be overdue for a small correction. I don't want to talk about that because a lot of people use that as an excuse never to get on board. And I am of the firm belief, although it's very psychologically hard to do, that you always have to chase the breakouts. If you miss them, you always have to chase the market. Market contingencies. Talking about portfolio hedges, markets tend to move in the same direction. All markets tend to move in the same direction in the short term. The reason is all traders are compulsive, addictive personalities, and all they want to do is follow the action. If you're standing in the soybean pit, and soybeans are limit up, and you've got 200 guys yelling buy orders, and you can't buy anything, limit up, the guy's going to run into the corn pit and try and buy corn. Just because he wants to buy something. He's got to buy something. He's got to fill the need for the action. Being in Las Vegas, I think guys can understand that. If corn and beans and everything else are limited, the guy will run into the next room to the treasury bond pit and buy treasury bonds because he's got to buy something. I've seen people, when I lived in Chicago, anything at the Board of Trade was limit up. Traders would get in taxi cabs and go six blocks down to the market so they could buy pork bellies or Swiss francs or something there. Why? Because traders crave action. The most important, the best thing a trader can do is trade every day and win. The second best thing a trader can do is trade every day and lose. And the worst thing a trader can do is stand around all day with his hands in his pockets and make a trade. Especially on the floor, guys who pay several hundred thousand dollars for seats, they're there for a reason. They're not there to stand around. So you get this sort of herd mentality that all markets tend to move up and down in sync during the day. When I talk about hedging direction of other positions, if I'm long four or five different markets and I get a sell signal and thing, that means I need less of the things on this list going for me to take that sell signal because it's a natural directional hedge. Attractiveness of the market, we talk about in terms of market attractiveness, a market is attractive for one reason and one reason only, if it makes you money. Some markets are more attractive than others in the sense that they trade better. Some markets are more attractive than others to certain big traders in the sense that they have more liquidity. Some markets are more attractive to some traders in the sense that they have more consistency. Basically, we crunch all the numbers. We take all the signals in every market over the past 10 years. We add up how many dollars the market has made. And we say this market is more attractive via something else. Who can tell me what the best trending markets are? Anybody out?
Currencies.
Markets trend better if they are large, deep, global liquid markets. Because I think of them as like a freight train. One momentum builds up and you've got 500 banks around the world pushing the currency market, it ain't going to be very easy to stop. Whereas if you're in a pork pit, somebody can come in with an order for 100 cars, nobody outside of 300 miles of Chicago knows anything or cares anything about pork bellies, that market can turn around on a dime. Currencies, and to a greater extent now financials too, once held up ahead of steam, those trends are really going to take off. Now, it might surprise you to know currencies are not the best trending markets. They're close. They're real good. They're numbers 3, 4, and 5. The best trending markets... I told you I didn't want to wear this microphone. The best trending markets are markets that are subject to big supply interruptions based on weather conditions. If you have a freeze in Brazil, where's the girl from Brazil? How about this? If you have a freeze in Brazil, there is nowhere else in the world that has either the quality or quantity of coffee to replenish that supply. And hey, I drink 5 cups a day. More when staying up all night playing cards. I am a big demand user of coffee. If the demand is relatively stable, and the supply gets cut in half, what happens to the market? Coffee, far and away, is the most profitable trending market based on testing the turtle systems over the past 15 years. Twice as much money as anything else. Number two, orange juice. They got some hellacious foods in orange juice, and you can go through shit for years, but every now and then, there's a freeze in Florida, and I live there, so I know orange juice goes through the roof from $1 to $2 a pound, limit up 15 days in a row, because they cannot replenish the supply from anywhere else. If you have a choice, let's say you're looking at the things on this list, and you have two possible breakouts, one in coffee and one in silver, and you don't know which one to take, you take the one that's the more attractive, more historically profitable market. Coffee, number one, orange juice, number two, and then the currencies. Now, Richard Dennis told us in 1983 not to trade the S&Ps. He said the S&Ps didn't trend very well. That might have been true in 1983, but it ain't true today. One of the reasons is more as we've become a more global trading environment, everybody around the world knows about the Dow Jones, the S&Ps, the U.S. stock market, etc., etc. And by the way, all the foreign stock indexes, the FTSE, the DAX, the CAC, the Nikkei, they all trend pretty well too. S&Ps have been in a huge bull market. In fact, I've got a system for S&Ps. Anybody want to hear it? It's outside the scope of my discussion, but I'll tell you my S&P system. Buy and hold. Monday morning, call your broker, buy one SP at the market. Call me up next year, tell me how much money you made. I wrote a very good piece in one of my newsletters last summer about, and I'm not by any means a fundamental trader, but since I have degrees in economics and finance, I proved to my parents I didn't waste money on my college education. I wrote an article giving very fundamental reasons why I think the U.S. stock market is in a long-term bull market. And the bottom line was, It's a demand-driven market. As long as new cash keeps coming into mutual funds from baby boomers or retirement funds or anywhere else, that market's going to keep going up. When the mutual fund industry starts reporting withdrawals instead of net increases every month, that's when it's going to be over. But right now, yeah, it's still buy and hold. That's my thesis. Okay, last thing, execution slippage. How many people know what slippage means? How many people like it? A little bit of slippage is a good thing. A lot of slippage means get a new broker. If you have a market immediately giving you some skid on your orders, the market is telling you, at least in the short term, yes, it's trying to go your way. If you get what I call negative slippage, you're screwed. Okay? Your broker will try and tell you what a great deal he did for you when you tried to buy something at 20 and he filled you at 19. Why would anybody possibly give you a gift? You tell me. If the broker could fill it at 19, he would charge you 20 and put a tick in his pocket. That's why these pay lots of money to be down on the floor. No way he's going to give it to you. He's got a family to feed. The only way you want to buy something at 20 and get filled at 19 is because Merrill Lynch has 5,000 to sell at 21. And as soon as that order hits, the market goes boom, and the next thing you know, it's at 15. Rich Dennis used to say, if you get filled better than your stop price, get out of that trade immediately. You're going to be in trouble an hour later. Okay. Everybody understand all the things on this list? Any questions before I go forward? Yes. Not a day trade. Although, if I breakout point is 20 days higher, and now the market's 19 days higher and limit up, that's a good place to anticipate and go a little bit early. No, we haven't gotten to what the requirements are yet. Just want to make sure everybody understands the rules first. Okay, requirements. Doing good. I can finish this and go to sleep. Wake up and play blackjack tonight. Oh, boy. You need approximately half the things on this list to consider making a trade, to have minimum necessary criteria. Approximately half the things on this list, and once you satisfy that, the more things you have before you, the better. Now, the good news is you automatically have a bunch of things going for you on this list if you are trading correctly according to the Turtle Principles. You'll automatically have A, B, and C. You'll automatically have number 3, number 5, number 9, number 10, number 15. Everybody understand those. A, B, and C, 3, 5, 9, 10, and 15, if you're following Turtle trend following principles correctly, you automatically have those going for you all the time. Okay? Now, system one, short-term system. Besides all the other automatic things I just mentioned, you need number 6, which is a 4-week breakout, and number 4, which is last theoretical trade is a loss, which I haven't quite discussed yet, and I'll get to in a few minutes. Number 6 and number 4, plus all the absolutes, plus whatever other stuff you have, the more the better. That's system 1. So you're basically trading at 20-day breakouts when your last trade was a loss, and whatever other stuff you have just makes that trade more attractive. System 2, number 1, critical rule number 1, that's all you need. If you have a 50-day breakout, you don't need anything else. If you have the market taking out the highest high, the lowest low of the last 50 days of price action, that's strong enough all by itself without anything else. So even though I say without anything else, you still have all those other absolute and automatic rules going for you. You will get 20-day breakouts, 4-week breakouts, approximately 8 or 9 times a year in each given market. You will get 50-day breakouts or 10-week breakouts approximately 4 or 5 times a year in each given market. Obviously, if you have a 50-day breakout, you automatically have the 20-day breakout, either first or concurrently. But not necessarily the opposite. Okay? By definition, the 20-day breakouts have to come first before the 50-day breakouts, although they could come at the same time. You could have simultaneous breakouts. You'll have, if we look at charts where there's a narrow consolidation range, the highest high of the past 20 days can also be the highest high of the past 50 days, can also be the highest high of the past 6 months. Okay? So sometimes they come together. As I said, the System 1, 4-week breakouts, 8 or 9 trades a year. So 2, 10-week breakouts, 4 or 5 trades a year. Okay? Big price action, less other stuff in System 2. Smaller minor breakouts, but you need some of the other stuff going with it in System 1. Okay, any questions about any of this stuff? And believe me, I look at this checklist every time I'm considering taking a trade in the market. I might not turn to this page in the notebook because all this stuff is embedded in my head, but I will consider all these criteria and all these qualifications. It ain't just a simple 20-day channel breakout system, as somebody else would have you believe. Okay? Any questions on any of this stuff so far? If you buy on a 50-day breakout and sometime later you have a 20-day breakout to the low side, an automatic sell. Well, we haven't discussed liquidation criteria, and we're not going to do that till next year, but the hint of the answer is yes. If you start seeing initiation criteria in the opposite direction, you probably overstayed your welcome as far as that trade is concerned. And yes, actually it is. For System 2, the 50-day breakout system, 20 days against you in the opposite direction is probably the most important liquidation criteria. So you don't have to come next year. You already know that. You can go listen to somebody else. Very simply, let me say it again. Any of this stuff on the list, okay? Markets do 3 things. They go up, they go down, they go sideways, and they alternate those periods. In order for a market to go from up to down, it's got to go through sideways first. If you're long and you start seeing initiation criteria for a short sell, you've overstayed your welcome to the long side. Everybody understand that? Okay. Any other questions before we go forward? I'm sorry? Smaller volatility range. Say again? Yes. Well, that's rule number 2, recent consolidation. Smaller volatility range, recent consolidation, that makes the breakout better, does come. Any other questions? Okay, here's what I want to do. We have not...